C1 PR. Number 10 B.
Then we say, all right, but now what next? And she says, and you see, this thought, this desire, which is willing to be molded according to the divine mind, therefore must be directed to one thing only, to God, to the divine mind. It must therefore not be directed to anything else. It is the purity of thought. You see, you get now mind the spirit, the purity of thought, which says, all right, and that desire is only a divine desire and a right desire if it's desiring God. If it's desiring something else besides God, it is desiring another God. And so that's why she says, do we pray to make ourselves better? That would be another motive than to know God. Or do we pray to benefit those who hear us, or to enlighten the infinite, or to be heard by men? She said, no. She says, the only pure desire is that desire which goes forth hungering after righteousness, and that, she says, is blessed by our Father. See, so wonderful. The second point is the purity of that thought. The purity says, what is a pure desire? She says, a pure desire is only that if you worship but one God. The moment in our desire is something else, but to trust ourselves wholly to God, it's no more pure. Doesn't it need courage? Sometimes I feel it needs a lot of courage. Because the arguments are always, I mean, when you are in a real case where you feel, well, something has to happen and has to happen very quickly, or I don't know what happened. And then just to be calm and say, now be sensible. What's going on? All that is going on is the divine mind. All right, let's seek mind. Well, second, that's mind of mind. Second says, all right, then don't seek anything else but mind. That's the purity of motive. Then comes the third and says, all right, if you seek but mind and have no other motives but the divine mind, then third, be humble enough and change your outlook. Don't ask God to change a situation. God is unchangeable, she says. God is not moved by the breath of praise. It's unchanging wisdom and love. But she says we can do more for ourselves by humble, fervent petition. So you get a sense of humbleness, which says, all right, I don't put my own will, my own design into that whole picture. I'm going to change my attitude. God is not going to change anyway, so I'm going to change. And it needs that great sense of meekness and humbleness where one just falls down mentally on one's knee and says, all right, thy will be done. Not my will be done. Then we come to the fourth. Says, all right, that desire is a wonderful desire. What does it do if I comply with all that has been asked of me up to now? That I let my thoughts be molded by the divine mind. And that this molding can only go on if it's pure, if it's directed to the divine mind. And therefore, I must be willing and humble enough to change my thought. To change my thought, how? And so comes the fourth and says, so that they are one with the divine mind. They come into harmony with the divine mind. The moment I comply with the first three, the fourth comes always and brings us into harmony with the divine principle. And so she says, prayer cannot change the signs of it, but it tends to bring us into harmony with it. You see already how the solution begins to open up. See, the moment we comply with the first three, thought is humble enough to say, all right, my desires shall be like God's desires, And so they are synchronized, so to say, with God's desires. They get into harmony with God's desires. And so I have the fourth subtone, that the desire must be to come into harmony with the signs of being. Once I have that willingness, that humbleness, where thought comes into harmony with the signs of being, what happens? Well, then, naturally, the floodgates of heaven open. Then the signs of being opens up its source, its unfathomable source, and my thought just can stand there and say, well, can I accept all that God gives me? Thought just, that desire is then just open and says, well, can I receive all that God is already pouring forth? And so she says in that sense, well, shall we plead for more at the open fount, which is pouring forth more than we accept? The unspoken desire does bring us near to the source of all existent blessedness. I could hardly go on in that chapter on prayer for the last few weeks. I always came back to the first prayer. It kept me busy and busy and busy. It filled me so much. I felt there is so much in that prayer. And look what it will do if we really worship that prayer from the point of view of spirit. What it will do if we are willing to go through this way, where we say, all right, what do I want in life? What is my desire? My big and one desire, my big love, to know God as He is. All right. Am I willing, therefore, to change my thoughts and to direct my thoughts, the purity of thoughts, towards this one God? And I say to myself, all right, yes, let's do it. Let's contemplate once this one God. All right, mind of soul says, then be humble enough and don't interfere with your own will and with your own desires. Just be humble enough and let God be what He is. God is unchanging wisdom and love. Let Him be what He is and let Him give what He gives. And so I come to mind as principle where I feel, all right, and my thoughts, when I do that, my thoughts are in line with principle. They are synchronized in harmony with principle. Well, with principle, with what? Then suddenly the whole thing opens and says, oh gosh, it's one with principle, and principle is always the same, and it's always reducing infinity to simplicity. It's always reducing the infinite to where I am. And so I have a feeling of life which says, my word, God is pouring forth now and every moment a million times more than what I'm willing to accept. And I get a sense of richness and of bounty and of infinitude that I say to myself, my word, what a blessed thing it is to open thought to infinity. After all, life is life, and life is God, and God is unchanging. He's the all. Therefore, it's the source of all blessedness. And He can't give parts. God can't give little. God is all, therefore He's not little. God is infinite, therefore He's not finite. Therefore, God cannot give me a little. He just can't. Even if it would, He can only give me all. And He can only give me infinitude. Infinitude. That's the tone of life. You see, it's first an awakening to it, not yet the demonstration of it. We are only in the chapter on prayer of the right approach. But it's wonderful when one goes through the way. And then we come to the subtone of truth, where truth says, where thought says, all right, if God is always pouring forth more than we accept, and He is doing that in an unchangeable way, well, then he is doing already now right. And it's only a question of me if I can trust him that he is right, if I can see that he is right, if I can be satisfied that he is right. And don't try to advise him, and don't try, what is that funny word in English? Warrant him, or how you say it? Warrant. Well, to warrant him, sorry, but to warrant him what he should do, you see, and to advise him and to, that's the wonderful tone where I begin to realize something much bigger than I can fathom, namely that which is going on now at this moment with the world and with me and with everybody is much more right than what I can think out. He says that he is doing right and is always doing right, and I can't advise him. And we are not, we can't warrant him. I don't know this word really, but you know what I mean, you see. And that's wonderful, because we are so limited that we say to ourselves, well, if God works this and this way, then I have made a demonstration. What a limited sense. When I advise God that if he works the way I think it is right, that then alone he is right. It's a very limited concept of right. Very limited. And that's where we have so much trouble with ourselves, where we say, I haven't made the demonstration, where we say, well, all is going wrong. And 10 years later we say, no, everything went right then, but I couldn't see it. Why couldn't we see it? Because we couldn't see that if I approach rightly, up to the tone of life, that truth is doing right. And that truth doesn't ask me if I agree with it or not. And so I get a sense that God is doing right, but on a much vaster scale and within a much vaster plan than I can figure out. So trustworthiness, we must trust God in his plan, in his rightness. Trustworthiness is the foundation of enlightened faith. See, once I come to that point, naturally that leads me to the last point of my thought and desire, where I see my work. God's work is already done. And I can only apply the rule of God. The rule to go through the 7 subtones. And to go through it again and again and again, until that rule establishes itself in me and I get the feeling, oh yes, God is doing his work, and that work is always salvation. And I get a feeling, all right, as we have a science today, I can use that rule. I can use the truth. I can say to myself, what is mine is mine, and I can go through the tone and use the rule. And then she says, all right, if you use the rule, that brings you God's blessing, which enables you to work out your own salvation. Well, that's what we have. Now, I didn't give you the epitomes, but I just can't. I mean, if I give you a word or a sentence, then you think, well, that's the only right thing. But could you hear the tone in it? There's always a sense first of a right desire, how that right desire must be directed. But let me go through the question 13, where I ask, can you see the developing sequence? Where I already tried to point it out, where we can see that in that whole rhythm there is one logic in it, one big logic in it. Now, I will summarize it as I have it here, so I may stick a little bit to the text, what I have here. Let's go over it again. The first big subject is, say, the desire to approach God in his allness as he is. That's the big tone, you see. Now, The third tones give me an answer. How shall I do it? What does this mean? And so I come to the third tone of mind, which says, all right, the first thing is we must be willing to let our desires be molded by God. That's the first point I have to comply with. If I do that, I ask, but how can I let my desires be molded by God? That I have to know too. So the second tone of spirit comes and says, I tell you. And it says, how can your thoughts be molded by God? It says, not by looking towards something else, but only through that pure motive which goes forth hungering after God, after righteousness. That's the only way, the only purification way, that our whole desire is going forth after God. Well, then, what does that imply? So we come to the subtone of soul. As our desire is going forth after God, after righteousness alone, well, that means that my thoughts must be humble enough to put all other desires away. So, as righteousness, deity, does not change, well, our desires must be changing. They must be humble, adaptive to God. See, that's the tone of soul. That they must be humble, adaptive to soul, subservient to God. Well, that brings me to principle. The moment my desires is adaptive to God, well, that links me, so to say, with God. And our desires are thus brought into harmony with God. It's a very logical sequence. Are brought into harmony with God. Well, into harmony with the whole science of being, with being. Well, that brings me to life. Namely, as my thought is brought into harmony with being, I open up being. My thought is open. It's brought closer and closer to being, to the source of all existence. It's wonderful, you see. That's something which happens. And suddenly you say, well, something has lightened up in my thought. Something has become clear in my thought. Well, why has it happened? Because it has gone through that whole rhythm. And so we come to truth, where we see, so we find that our real desire, to advise God is completely unwarranted, that I must leave that desire to advise God, and that because from the source of all existence, always the right answer, always the right doings of God is flowing forth. Well, if that is so, my thought says, well, then I must accept that God's work is done already. I come to the fulfillment of that thought, you see, where I say, well, then all what I have desired and tried to desire through to know God, I begin now to see that God's work is done. And so this makes me realize that God's work is perfectly done. And this induces in me certainly the desire to avail myself of God's rule. That induces in me that wonderful desire of love to use the science of being. To use that rule so to see that God's work is done. Well, I have not enough time to go through all these wonderful notes I have here. But can you see how this first tone, from whatever angle we look at it, it's opening up something very big, I feel. And viewing that whole subject from that sense of bigness, it would be nice to go through those stones again. Just from the point of view of bigness. That's just one way of doing it. You may have gone through those stones from another point of view. But let us go through it once from that stone of bigness. What does it say? You see, it says a wrong praying really would be to pray for a specific answer. To pray for a specific answer. Prayer starts and says, no, first, the first thing you have to do is to pray for the allness of God. If we have the allness of God, then we can be sure that the allness includes everything. Like, as I said, like Saul, when he went up to Samuel, when Saul had lost his asses, Saul uncovered in him that he should not look after little things, after little asses. He said, why don't you take the whole realm? If you take the whole realm and if you anoint yourself as the king of whole Israel, you have found everything. Everything is in. Well, that's what principle always says to us. That's the sign of being. He says, well, seek the principle of being, then the richness of life just pours forth. But it says you can't start with life. You have first to seek the principle of being. Here she begins it and says, all right, the principle of being is mine and mine is all. So the first thing we have to pray, and always pray, is the allness of mine. So let's go through the subtones and see what it would imply in our prayer. What positive views it opens up and what it uncovers what we shouldn't do in our prayer. In the subtone of mind, she says, all right, your desire goes out that mind knows all. That's your prayer. Therefore, the conclusion would be, don't pray for a single thought. And how often we do? We say to the other, give me a good thought. Well, we can do that, but that's not scientific prayer. Scientific prayer says God knows all. Therefore, our prayer must go reach out for the allness of mind, the all-knowing mind. Then in the subtone of spirit, she says, well, we should hunger and thirst after righteousness as such. After that bigness of righteousness. Well, that uncovers in us that we shouldn't direct our interest to one or the other thing which we deem to be right. See, it says, no, hunger after righteousness is that. Don't hunger after, I want to demonstrate this, and I want to demonstrate that, and I want to demonstrate the other thing. The thing which you will find, and which you have found out, I am sure, many times when you look back on your life, that the biggest blessings came unlabored. Even perhaps unnoticed at the moment, only afterwards one noticed what a big blessing came. And when one traces it back and back, one always finds, or usually one finds that out, that it was the outflow of just an open, big, expectant mind, which wasn't looking out for this and that and this and that. And then it flows in. Or she says in the subtone of soul, well, love bestows all good. It's the all-loving. She doesn't say it bestows here a little and there a little good. Because in our prayer we are tempted to say, well, dear God, if you only give me this and that. You see, it says, if you only. And it limits. Whereas soul is unrestricted. It is all good. And therefore our prayer must go out for the all-loving, for the all-blessing. And not blessing a little bit, and expecting a little bit of blessing. We must expect the all, because God can't give a part. God is all, and we can't split him up. He is always all. And the moment we expect from him something which he is not, we expect from him something which he is not if we expect from him something little. We expect from him something which he is not, and he cannot give. God is all, he can only give all. And that's what she says here. Or she says in the subtone of principles, she says that prayer brings us into harmony with the science of being. Well, that means that prayer brings us into harmony with the whole of being, with the whole science of being. That uncovers in me the tendency that I only want, that I pray that I come into harmony with. And then it's the husband or with the children or with the boss or with the world or with the neighbor or with anything. You see, it's little. And the moment I pray that I come into harmony with my boss or with my neighbor, I'm not praying to God. I'm not praying to the allness, the fact as such of harmony, the fact as such of relationship. And I limit it if I don't do that. Or she says in life that the unspoken desire brings us to the source of all existence. Well, that uncovers in me that every prayer which is not directed to the all of existence is not the right prayer. That therefore a prayer which only goes forth to the source of my existence. Usually we just say, well, if I only get saved, or if I only get out of the trouble, I say, well, that's a God which is only concerned with me, and it's not correct. It's limited. Can you see how she presents right at the beginning the allness of God and says, first we must have the allness of mind, the allness of spirit, the allness of soul, the allness of principle, the allness of life. Then she comes to the allness of truth and says, well, that prayer should be a reaching for the right which is immutably right. Therefore, a right which is independent, so to say, of time, place, and circumstance, and human standards, and human judgments. Because, as I said before, we usually pray and say, well, if it works out this way and that way, then it is right. Then I have made my demonstration. That's limited. That's not the prayer to truth. To the truth which is immutably right and which says, you don't have to advise me then how to do it and when to do it and in which measure to do it. Truth has an enormous big plan. Truth wants to work out the compound idea of man and not our own egoistic sense of man. And so truth has a bigger picture in mind to work out than what we deem right for us. This very first prayer is so big already. It demands of us an enormous bigness, a bigness of attitude, of character, of outlook. Or in love, in the subtone of love, she says that this prayer is really a prayer which goes out to the principle of all goodness, to the universal rule of all art. You see, she says, the beginning of your prayer is to go to the root of all answers, and not, therefore, a prayer which says, I want to find the root for my problem. That would be a limited thing. That would say, there is another root for my answer than for the answer of somebody else. And I would have more than one principle. She says, there is only one principle of all goodness. Therefore, she says, whatever your problem is, always go back to the same root, to the same solution, the same Savior, God's principle. And that work is always done. I don't know if I have made myself quite well understood what I want to point out here in this first... Not what I want to point out. The point is that I just marvel what Mrs. Eddy presents us as a first stage. As a first stage, as prayer. Because we are used to say, I go to pray over it because I'm in some trouble and I say, I want that trouble to be solved. Well, that's all right. But the point is now, how do I go at it? And the go at it, the approach to it is scientific. It's one prayer. It's one prayer. There is only one prayer which covers all human needs, but it's one prayer. It's the prayer which says, go to the one mind, and go to the mind as mind is, and not as mind is not. Mind as it is says, I know all, I give all, I bestow all. I'm all harmony, the harmony of all. I'm the source of all. I'm all righteousness. I'm that which is always and under every circumstance right. And I'm that all, the one big principle of every salvation, of every solution. That's why we can see that it's one system, it's one principle.